This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. Talent scout, engineer, and producer Ralph Peer is known for launching the careers of some of country music's biggest stars, like the Carter family.
Can the circle be unbroken by and by, Lord, by and by? There's a bitter home awaiting in the sky, Lord, in the sky.
But Ralph Peer's influence is not limited to discovering and producing the Carter family. Peer brought roots, country, jazz, Latin, and blues music to new audiences across the globe. Music journalist and author Barry Mazur explores Peer's vast career in his biography, Ralph Peer and the Making of Popular Roots Music, and he joins me now. Barry Mazur, welcome to the State of Things.
Glad to be here.
Also with us is musician Dom Flemons, formerly of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, now on his own, and we're happy to have you back. Dom, welcome back.
Hey, Frank. Glad to be back.
Dom and Barry are going to be at UNC's Wilson Special Collections Library for a conversation and concert this evening at 6 o'clock. They're here with us now. Barry, you know, a lot of people do know the name Ralph Peer, and they know it because of something called the Bristol Sessions, but he did more. What are some of the highlights of his career?
Yeah, you're so right. Bristol was very important, and it was 2 weeks out of 50 years, half of which he spent as an A&R man with the record companies, finding talent, and starting recording genres, in many cases, the second half as a global publisher of that music and took it everywhere. So the first successful blues records by an African-American singer, Mamie Smith's Crazy Blues, Ralph Peer oversaw. The first location recordings in the South, of the first jazz bands recorded in New Orleans, the first blues records actually recorded in the South, Ralph Peer. The first country sessions, which was Fiddlin' John Carson in Atlanta, 4 or 5 years before Bristol, Ralph Peer. He founded these recording genres by identifying audiences who were interested in music that wasn't getting played, and he recorded it. That was his primary contribution. Step by step, he took those ideas and he popularized it so more and more people could relate to the records that came out.
I think that's the very interesting thing. It's one thing for somebody with an ear or with any kind of a heart for preserving the music to kind of run around and find it, but actually creating the audiences. I mean, understanding that there's an audience out there and then doing what it takes to make a record and get it sold. That's a whole other, that's the business side of this, right?
That's who he was, and that's what he cared about. He didn't start out to preserve anything.
Yeah.
He wasn't documenting anything. He liked the localized regional music that what I'm calling roots music. They didn't use that word in the day, but it covers the span of what he was involved with exactly. Music that has a history and a rhythm of the people and a place and the flavor. Okay. The whole point to him was that people hadn't heard it other places.
Right.
So it was new. It was novel. You could do things with it. And if you handled it the right way, a lot of people might like it. And that was the basis of this idea of popularizing roots music.
Dom, you learned a lot about Ralph Peer from the Southern Folklife Collection, right? Tell us about discovering Ralph Peer.
Well, you know, when I first moved to North Carolina in 2005, I had heard of Ralph Peer, kind of the basic stories that Barry's talking about in the earlier parts of his career. And, you know, when I was searching black banjo players in the Southern Folklife Collection, I came across this long interview with Ralph Peer. It was about 8 or 9 CDs long. And I just thought, hey, that'd be cool to hear an interview with Ralph Peer. And I found this fascinating journey unfold where, you know, the thing about Ralph Peer is, unlike the personalities that we tend to hear about in folklore of our country in the early recording industry, Ralph Peer was the guy organizing and doing what they called A&R, which is, it's kind of a gray area. Producer A&R is kind of a gray area now in the industry, but it's really interesting to read about a fellow who took that time to find the business
Audience and research, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's about selling the records, but again, finding these markets is what made it possible for the music to flourish and musicians to work.
Mm-hmm.
Cool stuff. Well, I want to get you to play a song for us, Dom, and it's called Tea for Texas. But Barry, maybe you can tell us a little bit about Peer's. Yeah, tell us about this song and Peer's involvement in it.
This was a record that exploded. One of the people at Bristol that Pure discovered, recorded, came to manage, publish, and have a close personal relationship was the father of country music, Jimmy Rogers. He didn't have a whole lot of songs ready for Bristol that were going much of anywhere, but only a few months later, they had a session which included that one, which was technically called Blue Yodel, and it became one of the biggest selling records of the era. Dom's going to play it for you. This is tough Saturday night hillbilly in a bar kind of music laid out for the future. And it's someone's recording it somewhere to this day.
All right. Well, I'll set them up. And Dom, will you play it for us?
All right.
T for Texas, T for Tennessee. And it's T for Texas, T for Tennessee. T for Thelma, the gal and made a wreck out of me. Oddly, 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 oddly. If you don't want me, mama, you sure don't have to stall. Oh, Lord. If you don't want me, mama, you sure don't have to stall. Cause I can get more women than a passenger train can haul. Oodley, oodley, hey, oodley. Gonna get me a shotgun just as long as my right arm. I'm gonna get me a shotgun as long as my right arm. Gonna shoot that woman, the one that's done me harm. Oodley, oodley, hey, oodley. If the house catch a fire and there ain't no water around, if the house catch a fire, there ain't no water around, throw that trunk out the window and let the shack burn on down. Oodley, oodley, hey, oodley. I'd rather drink muddy water and sleep in a hollow log. I'd rather drink muddy water and sleep in a hollow log than to stay in Atlanta and treat it like a dirty dog. Oodley, oodley, hey, oodley.
That is T for Texas. Dom Flemons with us. He and Barry Mazur are going to present a conversation and concert about musical producer and talent scout Ralph Peer tonight, 6 o'clock, UNC's Wilson Special Collections Library. What a great song. But Barry, tell me about this. When did this come out? Because you said it made number one. So I'd love to know when this happened and who all was buying that record.
1927. And it's a crucial example of that popularization project gone national, because we think of that now as clearly a country record, though it's also obviously a blues. And the fact is, in 1927, I always place this, which is like Bristol happens that summer. You know, Lindbergh gets famous that summer. Babe Ruth hit 60 home runs that summer. Al Jolson's recording The Jazz Singer, and movies are going sound that summer. You could be more famous than ever before. Mm-hmm. And so by tying Jimmy Rogers' personality as the blue yodeler, the singing brakeman, to the songs he sang, like that one and that kind of tough guy image, but charming, he went national. He was marketed as a pop singer, and Jimmy Rogers became a national pop star.
Yeah, no, I think it's
the Elvis of his time.
Yeah, well, but this is the birth of maybe popular culture in that way, in that it's now really exploding, and there's almost a nation looking for that kind of personality. I mean, interesting that you would put it in that kind of perspective in 1927. Tell me, you know, maybe we should do, let's do another song now. We're going to do In the Jailhouse. Anything? What should we know about this, Barry?
Yeah, there are many versions of this. It was around as a patter song in vaudeville. There's four or five completely different versions. Jimmy Rogers had a version. The Memphis Jug Band had a version. Blind Blake had a version. And they were all different enough that you could copyright them and they could all do well with them. I think, well, Dom, you'll tell us which version you got.
Well, you know, the one that I ended up getting was from the Memphis Jug Band's version. And for them, you know, when I was doing research for my Oxford American article on Gus Cannon, I came to this sort of area where I kept having a question, wondering why were they recording specific types of songs, older songs, familiar songs that might not have been the most popular up-to-date pop songs. And Barry's book about Ralph Peer, that totally sets it up, where you have this sort of big popular culture emerging, and the fact that you could find an audience to sell different things. Even the one of the fun things about the Blue Yodels, you know, there were 12 of them. And one of the things that Barry's book talks about is that Ralph Peer had an idea to sell them almost like a picture book albums. You know, a lot of 78 collectors will have books of 78 records. And so Ralph Peer was selling the Blue Yodel book to
Blue
Yodels in. It was an album.
That's why we call it an album, right? Yeah.
You know, and just trying to think of the audience that he was looking for that would buy it, put those in the album, and almost like coin collecting.
Save them
know?
All. Collect all 12.
That's right.
In the jailhouse now, Dom Fleming. Let's hear it.
All right.
Paid the biggest price. Next day at the polls, he voted with heart and soul. But instead of voting once, he voted twice. He's in the jailhouse now. Instead of him staying at home, letting all them white folk business alone. He's in the jailhouse now. You remember Henry Crewe? He sold that no good brew. He sold it to the police on the beat. Now Henry's feeling funny. Police give him marked money. He's got a ball and chain around his feet. He's in the jailhouse now. He's in the jailhouse now. Now the judge gave him 2 years, and now Henry's shedding tears. He's in the jailhouse now. Now I'm gonna play one. Go ahead, folks.
Dom Flemons. He and Barry Mays are going to present a conversation and concert about the musical producer and talent scout Ralph Peer. That song called In the Jailhouse. Now, Barry, there have been criticisms from time to time that Ralph Peer took advantage of some artists and sort of appropriated their music and didn't give them fair compensation, either in terms of credit or certainly material reward money. What have you found?
The opposite. The exact opposite. Those are usually based on horror stories of the music industry, which can be real enough. But the fact is, Peer's people did get paid for the recording, for the royalties on their songs. These people were brought into show business, and if they were making money, they got theirs. There's a lot of mythology about this man and the story, usually based on extremely small smatterings of information or some remark somebody made. You know, the two sentences that you'll never hear. I've interviewed hundreds of musicians over the last 40 years, and there's two sentences you will not hear, one of which is, I got too much credit for that, and the other one is, they paid me too much. So you will not hear those. And so if you go into the research, well, what exactly did happen? There's a different story to tell, and I tell that story in this book, too.
All right. Well, I want to leave you time to play us out, Dom. I think you're going to play the James Alley Blues. Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah. This is one that was published by Peer. It was recorded by a fellow by the name of Richard Rabbit Brown. And this was a... This is a strange recording in the way that it's the only thing that's kept it in popular culture is the Anthology of American Folk Music, edited by Harry Smith, that was put out by Smithsonian Folkways. And kind of through my own experiences in the old-time field, I developed a tuning to try to mimic what Rabbit Brown was doing on that recording. And it has one of the best blues lyrics.
Yeah, well,
Dom, can I throw in one point of fact here?
Yeah, man.
Which is that on the Harry Smith collection, which is like Harry anthologized those songs, but 40% of the songs on that famous set were actually recorded by Ralph Peer.
Well, we're going to hear a live version of it now. Dom Flemons is going to play it, but first I want to remind everybody that Dom's got an album out. His latest album is called The American Songster, Dom Flemons, Prospect Hill. That is his latest. And Dom is going to be with Barry Mazur, who is a musical journalist and the author of Ralph Peer and the Making of Popular Roots Music. They're going to be at UNC's Wilson Special Collections Library for a conversation about Ralph Peer. That's tonight at 6 o'clock. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Right now, here's Dom Flemons.
Old times ain't now nothing like they used to be. Old times ain't now nothing like they used to be. Now tell the truth, oh, take it from me. I done seen better days, but I ain't putting up with these. I done seen better days, I ain't putting up with these. I'll have a much better time if these girls weren't so hard to please. Cause I was born in the country, thinks I'm easy to rule. Cause I was born in the country, she thinks I'm easy to rule. She wanna hitch me to a wagon, she wanna drive me like a mule. Though I bought the groceries and I paid the rent. Though I bought all the groceries and I paid the rent. Try to make me wash her clothes, but I've got good common sense. Says if you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? Says if you don't want me, why don't you tell me so? It ain't like a man ain't got nowhere to go. Says you want me to love you and you treat me mean. How do you want me to love you? You keep on treating me mean. You're my daily thought and my nightly dream. Been give you sugar for sugar, let you get salt for salt. Then give you sugar for sugar, let you get soul for soul. And if you can't get along with me, then it's your own fault. Sometimes I think you're too sweet to die. Sometimes I think you're too sweet to die. Other times I think you ought to be buried alive.